magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, May 9th, 2017. Joining me in the studios here at the Great News Radio Center is our very own.
Wow.
Mary Ann Oppenstein.
Hi, Mark. Oh, gosh. It sounds like a game show. And joining me.
Oh, we're going to get right into your book today, which I appreciate and have gotten a lot of feedback. I think, was it last Monday, a week ago?
I think it was.
A week and a day ago that we had you read a story right on the front end. I had a few announcements and we jumped right in. I think today, because can you believe it? I don't have much to talk about.
Oh, no.
I mean, a lot has been going on.
And is the world spinning the other way? What has happened? Poles have reversed.
Transformation is taking place. I'm sure I'll derail you a time or two, but I think we're going to pick out a couple of different chapters.
Yeah.
One on gratitude, I think you mentioned, and one on community. And the one that I was hoping you would maybe read on, the one about teaching.
Oh,
you
yeah.
gave me a little sneak preview. We'll save that for a future date. So thank you for joining me. And I don't know, gosh, are we here? We're past a year that you've been helping you?
Cause almost a year and a half.
Originally, it was to help launch the 20th birthday celebration.
Right.
So that was in April of last year. So, yeah, so it was.
Well, I started back in the September before that.
Okay. So we'll be nearing 2 years.
I think so.
Woohoo! All right. Well, it's Tuesday, and we hope you're launched into a good week. And we're going to start reading from Memories of an African Son, S-U-N. And sold a couple more copies of your book the other day, and you continue to read it for our English conversation class. You did reading yesterday, and it's always fun to see all the students, I think about 13, somewhere from like 11 to 15, I think, crowd in here. They all bring in their books,
and they're
all very excited to pull it out, and they have their little notepad. And I know you were telling me about the one story that was being told and how you'd have to stop like every 6 or 8 words now. What is that word?
Yeah.
And is it like this? And reservation. Now, what is that like? Is that like, and you're like, well, sort of, but different. And a lot of good learning going on.
Even for me.
Yes.
Well, like you know, you've talked about how it makes you think, like, is that a plane? What's that?
Reservation? Yeah. Is that a restaurant term?
Is that a plane ticket?
And I will point out, we've had this successful English conversation class going on for a number of months now. We can always use help, and we'll have a new 6-week series starting at the end of May, basically the beginning of June. So if any of you have an inkling or a desire to help out and assist, it's really easy. You're kind of like a facilitator. There's a lesson plan all laid out, and you just walk the students through it. For the beginners, it's just enunciating, like we worked on last week. We worked on days of the week and months, and so you just say, Tuesday. Everyone say Tuesday.
And that's today.
Tuesday. Tuesday, May.
May.
Try it one more time. Okay. May.
Oh, Lord.
It's that
simple. People are clicking off the dial now.
Just lost half of our listenership.
Right. Well, we better get them back.
So, if you have an interest in helping, and trust me, everyone, I think we have 21 facilitators, teachers, helpers. I would say without an exception, they all leave saying, I love my students, my learners.
They really do.
They're good friends. I know Cindy Wendell, she comes in on Thursdays. And she said, Mark, I think 6 different of the gals, she has some of the beginners, but they're more middle-aged or they're family members or parents of some of the students. She said 6 different women gave me these great big hugs, and she said it was all worth it. So they're a delightful bunch. I have 6 very regulars, but I think they had almost perfect attendance these last 6 weeks.
Well, your group looks so enthused when I see them.
It's a fun group. One, I call her my cheerleader because she's just always like taking notes and beaming and glad. And I have a visiting scholar who's really sharp and tracks really well and kind of fills in some of the gaps when one of the other students doesn't understand a term.
Helpful.
She'll say it in Chinese, in Mandarin, and Yeah, it's a great group. We have a lot of fun, and we had four straight weeks where we never even got to the questions. We had so much conversation going on and storytelling, and then we worked on the words, and it's like, well, we didn't get to the questions again. Maybe next week. So we have two sessions in a row now that we've made it through everything.
Oh,
so I'm telling
good.
Everyone, we have to work diligently on the front end when it's 1 minute, because they all want to keep talking, which
sure
is
they do. Well, you,
really
you
good. But I'm my timer.
You kind of facilitate that
yeah.
and want to keep talking.
And then I grab the timer, and I kind of, and all the other ones kind of laugh. But once they get going, they want to keep talking.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun, and so if you have an interest, we'd love to bring you in maybe in the next week or two so you'd get the flow of how it works,
yeah.
and then sign you for just maybe a six-week commitment. It's Monday and Thursdays, or if you can only help out on Mondays or on Thursdays, that works too. We have a number of people that do both days, and some just do Mondays, some just do Thursdays. But give me a call, and I'd love to convince you to be a part of things. And trust me, you will be blessed as a result of showing up. I know the first time I've trained anyone, I many times have them sit in on my group. My group kind of feels special because they get all the new people coming in, and they're very welcoming, and everyone's like, gosh, I love your group, Mark.
Oh.
And I said, well, you can have your own group. So give us a call, 217-367-7777. That's 217-367-7777. Our English conversation classes will continue, and we'll have some breaks. Like we go, this 8-week session is ending in a couple weeks, and then we'll have a week break, and then there'll be three different 6-week sessions that'll be coming up in the coming months. So
right.
be a part of things and look to be blessed. All right, so we now have time to read. Is it called the gratitude?
Just gratitude. Well, not just gratitude. It's called gratitude.
Okay, gratitude.
yeah. Okay, thank you. Chapter 10, gratitude. The first house we lived in on our mission station was a tin, pre-assembled affair. It had been erected by the first builders on the station as a temporary dwelling while bricks were made and the sturdier brick houses were being built. While we were certainly grateful for a roof over our heads, the porous nature of the little tin house left much to be desired. Scorpions, lizards, tarantulas, worms, and all manner of bugs found their way easily into the prefabricated house. There was no keeping up with them. Try as we might, there was no way to make the tin hinges, the poor foundation, or the dilapidated points on this little house airtight or even flush. Give thanks to the Lord, the Bible says repeatedly. But how hard sometimes. Modern science is confirming what common sense has told us for a long time, that simple gratitude is one of the most profound and energizing of all emotions. It turns the mind to new horizons, rejuvenates the soul, and lifts the spirit to a lighter place. We don't even have to start out by trying to be grateful for difficulties, just learning to be grateful for the meal in front of us, for a running car, or for a child waking up healthy, if we truly feel it. This kind of gratefulness can change everything. Hmm. It was in our little bug-ridden house that I learned this profound lesson. One particular day brought dozens of scorpions running across our floors. I stood on the old sofa in the living room, sobbing as they ran in every direction underneath me. My parents tried their best to get the scorpions out of the house, and then, after a good long time of their comforting me, I settled down with a book, relatively secure. It began to rain, a welcome sound after the months of heat. The large drops echoed off the tin roof. My mother sat with my father in the living room and shared tea. Cyril, when it's all said and done, and we get back to America in a house of our own, do you think we could have a little porch? You could put a tin roof on it. You and I could sit out there together like this, drink tea, and listen to the rain. Where do you go to get that kind of life spirit? How do you learn to be grateful? By starting with the smallest thing in front of you, even if it means having to close your eyes and only listen to the beautiful sound of the rain as it hits an old tin roof. we find what we look for. Today, look for gratitude. Look for one thing, no matter how ordinary, to be grateful for. Even if you have to close your eyes and simply listen, or remember, or hope for. Father, give me a heart of gratitude, not of made-up superficial gratitude, but of true gratitude and thankfulness. Help me understand in my heart of hearts what it means to have food to eat, a bed to sleep in, and a roof over my head. Help me let go of greed and self-pity. Show me a good and right way to live in this world. Let gratitude, one of the greatest of emotions, become part of my character and spill out from my life to all those around me.
And all of God's people said? Hey, I wrote down a few little notes here.
Okay.
I think some of our listeners might be too grateful with all the rain we've been getting. Okay, stop being so grateful
for the
rain.
I have a chapter in here about the rains in Africa, and it says that very thing.
Okay,
too much or too little. Yeah,
stop being so grateful. And I wrote down bricks that were being made. That's kind of interesting because, you know, we just purchase a home and they deliver all these bricks, and probably there they had to be almost handmade or put together.
They weren't almost handmade. They were.
Yeah.
There was no brick place to go buy bricks from.
Right.
So everything on that station, which, as you know, was so far away, out into the bush, all the bricks were made there.
Yeah.
The big slats, and they pour the mud in and let it dry for a day, put it in the kiln, fire it, pull it out, stack it up, put big stuff hedges around it so the cows wouldn't come and knock it through, because they did. They knock it down.
Just didn't deliver them on a truck, huh? And I put down simple gratitude. I just thought that's kind of an interesting concept, a simple gratitude, simply to be grateful. Be grateful, period. You know, and I thought of an example with Corrie Ten Boom, and you've probably heard this from the Hiding Places story, where the one sister was telling Corrie, when it was all said and done, they were grateful for the lice, even though it was a miserable existence, because they had lice that kept the Germans or the SS or the Gestapo or whatever out of their barracks so that they could study the Bible and they didn't get molested or were in terrible circumstances, but because of the lice, they gave God thanks for them because it kept the people away. Grateful. Yeah. I think that's a good message for all of us today.
I think,
be grateful for those simple or little things. The fact if you're tuned in, you have hearing, that your heart's beating, that you're alive, your lungs are functioning, just all the bodily things that go on to allow us to exist. Let alone, you know, shelter, home over our head. Most of us know we're going to have lunch or dinner, you know, ahead of us. We know that our kids are safe to varying degrees. I mean, you could look at hundreds of things and say, God, thank you for those.
I think also as Americans, especially, or Westerners, we get a little bit out of touch. We call certain things the small things, the little things. If we didn't have them, they would immediately become the big things. And so we just say, well, of course, you know, we need to be grateful for food on the table. But what if we really were?
Yeah.
What if we sat there and looked at that and went, oh, my word, look at me. I have food. I am so glad.
Just think of water.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I've watched people carry in a drought, carrying water miles.
Air conditioning,
Know.
I mean, you know, we're spoiled beyond, you know, you think of the people in the times of Solomon, like, he had everything. He didn't have the air conditioning that we had. He didn't have the luxuries that we had. And
like that paper in your hand, what if we didn't have any paper and pens? We'd be in trouble here.
All right, well, I don't know, 7 minutes, do you think we can find a story 7 minutes long?
I can try.
Okay.
I'll
community?
Yeah.
We can have a little community here, everyone.
Stop
by the Great News Radio Center and we'll create some community.
All right, Chapter 9 was called Community. One of the first things I learned upon arriving at our mission station was that we were a community. Not in an idealistic or abstract sense, but in the concrete sense that we depended on each other in a real way. The survival of our station depended upon contribution by its members and upon cooperation and friendship. I had been fortunate to come from a place, Johnson Bible College in Tennessee, where the strains of the music of community already played strong in my mind. Located in Appalachian country, with a dairy farm at its center for income, the school had a motto that anyone who would work at manual labor and contribute their efforts could come to school, even if they couldn't pay. So I had a strong foundation for the concept of community. All the children and teenagers at the station called every adult other than their own parents aunt or uncle. My parents were suddenly Aunt Mary and Uncle Cyril. But the feeling of family and community ran deeper than verbal acknowledgement. These were the people we went to when something happened in the middle of the night. These were the people who would put out fires if they sprung up, brought food to the sick, saved us from snakes that made their way into our house, who loaded up Land Rovers and went to look for anyone who was lost. They had us over for dinner, over and over, shared with others when they didn't have enough, and helped repair the truck. There was simply no one else. Stripped of some of the trappings of modern civilization, people were the key, and we banded together for survival and purpose. We understood the value of the people, both in the villages around us and on our mission station. Many of the adults at our station were experts in their own right in their particular fields of study, and they pitched in to teach us children. My father taught history to some of the older grades, and the pharmacist who had come to work at the hospital to support the doctor and nurses taught science. He also taught me how to play the piano. I learned how to sew from the doctor's wife, a delightful, dear, petite woman at our mission. Once a week, during the hours when the electricity was on, my mother sent me down to her house, and for 3 hours she showed me how to carefully cut out patterns, use her sewing machine, and proudly smiled at the dresses and skirts I managed to produce. Her little kitchen was warm and fragrant as we made sugar cookies together after some of our sewing lessons. My art teacher was the pharmacist's wife. A fine artist herself, she was also generous with time and effort as she taught our class to draw. She would set out various pieces of clay pottery or flowers and show us how to think in artist's terms. With her dark head bent over her work, she explained how to hold the brush, create depth and shade. I personally did not turn out to be anyone's prize student in art. To my dismay, I could barely draw, but the art teacher's efforts gave me a great appreciation for the art that others could amazingly produce. I held on to my best piece of work, a clay water pot drawing, for many years. The children and teenagers on our station were also put to work, real, meaningful work. Some were taught to do significant medical tasks at the hospital, and they were a great help to the doctor and nurses. One learned to help keep the generator running. Another helped draw up construction plans for a building. They carried out numerous chores and tasks around the mission. The older ones could drive Land Rovers through the bush, and later some learned to fly small planes. Their exploits were daring. Sometimes we got into trouble. Many were skilled trackers and hunters and highly adept at understanding their way through the bush country for days on end. They were risk takers. The children on that mission station and at our other mission areas were hardy. It's the word that always comes to mind when I think of them. I don't know if they innately started out that way or if they just grew to be that way due to our circumstances, but the stamina and sheer undiluted grit that they showed impressed me then and impresses me now. Their adventures and tales would fill volumes. For a long time, I wondered why it was that I turned out to be such an individualist since I was raised in so many strong community environments. Then it finally dawned on me that the communities I grew up in were, in fact, part of the reason. In a good community, everyone counts and is counted on. Individuals matter and are taught to carry their own weight. These days, the word community sometimes seems to connote some notion of other people doing things for you, of you not having to work quite so hard. Yes, the sharing of talents is part of a community, but in the communities I grew up in, it was not so much about what a person would get out of others as it was about everyone doing their own part and making things work. It was about going above and beyond. Somehow, it created in me a paradoxical combination of individualism and a strong sense of how my decisions and actions affect the whole. I sped around the mission station many days on my treasured Raleigh bicycle. I rode until the paths around the station and to nearby villages simply ran out, and there were only bushlands left. My bicycle had a tire pump, tire patches, a spanner, and assorted other tools strapped here and there. I learned early that riding a bike in the bush meant being prepared. Often, I rode with my pet chameleon on my arm, flying across the dirt roads of our station. I have no idea if the chameleon enjoyed these daring rides, racing along with me as the air rushed in our faces. But in retrospect, I imagine he did not. He clung on valiantly, though, until we returned home. There is an African proverb, so old that there are many variations of it, that says, in essence, that it takes a village to raise a child. It was true on our mission station, and it was true in the villages we lived among. We don't forget people with whom we shared a singular adventure. The ties that bind us to those with whom we experienced great things are strong. I was lucky. I was fortunate to ride my Raleigh from person to person on the Circle Dirt Road and learn such an assortment of things. Personally, I think this is a little piece of what Jesus was getting at when he said to his disciples, "Let the little children come to me." Luke 18:16. The disciples had been sending the children away so important things could be done. If our communities and our cultures are too busy to stop, teach, and take care of the children wandering among us, then what are we really accomplishing? What are we possibly creating if we have missed being the communities who stop and hear the children? God help me to always have the time and the energy for children. For what is a community if it misses being there for its littlest or its oldest members? Help me to find ways to create community around myself that includes them, and to support everyone else who's doing that as well. Please stop me when I think any activity is more important than they are. Help me always remember that the Lord I serve stopped everything to be with the children.
Wow, I love these two. Gratitude and community. They're all found in the book Memories of an African Son by Marianne Simpkins. You can purchase copies here at the Great News Radio Center for $15 and buy a couple extra copies for friends and family members. Thank you, Marianne. I so appreciate you being a staff member here and reading your book, not only for our Great News Radio listeners, but for the English Conversation Group. Thanks for being a part of our radio community, as we're all grateful together that we get to serve the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the Lord Jesus Christ. This is Mark Burns and Marianne Offenstein with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.